timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Cut. Quantel, opt-in, opt-in. Go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. And it is once again Saturday, the 17th of June in the glorious future year of 2023. And I am live on a non-radio for however long it lasts. I raise a note of caution simply because my broadcast of yesterday, live broadcast of yesterday, did not archive as far as I can tell. I had some difficulties just now, as a matter of fact, because of the stream, the downlink dropped, and momentarily I was not able to restart it. I don't normally have that problem with MPG-123. Anyway, I always say that if you send me letters, I will likely read them over the air. And so here it comes, folks, the mail call. Now, this letter is a little surprising because it comes to me on my own letterhead, but that's my own fault for selling it to people. And it says, I'm a long-time listener to A Step Farther Out. While I've only been able to enjoy your program a few times live, I've been able to download and listen to you as often as I like, and this is many times. While your program is both interesting and fun, what is best is how much you get me thinking about the many subjects you visit. Please, please keep at it. Devoted fan, etc. P.S. Get off this rock. I say this in all the best ways. So, letter from a friend who listens to the show. Now, what else is there to say? Monday, here in the United States, is a postal and bank holiday now, under the somewhat confusing name of Juneteenth National Independence Day. I don't know how or why that name was chosen. It makes no sense to me. The 19th of June is the anniversary of the proclamation in Galveston, Texas, June 19th, 1865, by the United States military governor there, that slavery had been abolished and that anyone who had been held as a slave was henceforth a free man. If you ever read the proclamation, it's interesting because it shows to be the work of someone who has only very tenuous control. You know, it contains lines about, you know, please remain where you are, do not gather at military posts, etc., because he's clearly thinking, I do not have the manpower to actually keep order if things, you know, if there's a full-scale revolt here. But the Wall Street Journal today had an article about Ted Kaczynski. It was on page C4, which I have to believe was deliberate. Ted Kaczynski, a math graduate student who retreated to a cabin in the woods and began mailing out bombs, largely to universities and airlines. And no one could locate him, and finally, he was located because he claimed he would stop sending out bombs if major newspapers would publish his manifesto, and they went to the FBI and said, well, should we do it? And the FBI said yes, because we might be able to identify this guy if people can recognize his writing style. And that's exactly what happened. They finally tracked the guy down. Anyway, but his manifesto, anyway, the Wall Street Journal says his ideas are no longer fringe. They're, the idea, anyway. Oh, what does he start off with? He starts off by saying, the Industrial Revolution was the greatest mistake humanity's ever made. The Industrial Revolution was the greatest mistake humanity's ever made. And he goes on to talk about how it's dehumanizing us, it's destroying us. And I'm thinking, do you ever think for a moment about what came before the Industrial Revolution? Millions of people in chains from birth until death, whipped and burned and branded. No, sir. Do I approve of what's been done with industrial technology? Not unequivocally. A person who approves unequivocally and uncritically of anything probably deserves to have his head examined. Do I think that on balance, it's a very good and hopeful thing? I certainly do. Because, as I have said many times, technology, industrial technology, steam power, gives us the means of liberation, because it gives us the means of satisfying our needs and wants without so much labor. And the person who doesn't have to labor, doesn't have to toil, is then able to live as a human being, to participate in literature and culture and all those kinds of things. Now, obviously, the work of emancipation is yet unfinished. Right? Because what would emancipation look like? They say that roughly half of American adults are functionally illiterate, which means, they can read the driver's license, but if you gave them a chapter of Moby Dick, at the end, the end of it, they wouldn't be able to tell you what had happened. Well, that's probably not fair. There are chapters of Moby Dick where no one could tell you at the end what happened, because nothing happens in them. There's been a fad for people reading Moby Dick recently, and all I can say about it is that there's a lot of jokes in there which you won't get unless you're incredibly well-educated. A lot of sort of inside jokes for people like Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson, who were Herman Melville's close personal friends. Of course, yesterday was Bloom's Day, commemorating James Joyce's novel Ulysses, which takes place entirely on the 16th of June, and no one can understand that. So maybe this is not my best, example, because there's a lot of stuff which is currently considered great literature that's also, as far as I can tell, utterly impenetrable to the human mind, to the extent that you wonder, was this... is this actually created by human will and mind, or is this the product of some kind of primitive AI, Or is this the product of a Ouija board, channelers? God knows what. Okay. But I'm getting far off the point here. The real question is, what does emancipation look like? And my sort of rough general answer is, a person is emancipated when no one has more power over him than he has over himself. And, this is why in classical Rome, where, of course, not only was slavery ubiquitous and there was often despotic government, but you also had this quite terrifying social institution known as the patria potestas, under which, or by virtue of which, the oldest living male member of a family had, in principle at least, absolute power over his offspring and their and their, his male offspring, their wives, any unmarried children, even to the power of life and death, even if they were consuls or something. It was a very disturbing institution, which the Romans themselves didn't like. They were just afraid to do away with it because they figured it might be load-bearing, essentially. They didn't know what would happen if they were to abolish it. But, so, this is why, in classical Rome, it was a very common idea that suicide was not merely acceptable or correct, but even heroic, because it was a way of setting the whole world at defiance. It was, in the last extremity, a way of saying, you don't have power over me. Well, I don't think that suicide is a very good choice. Certainly not on a social scale. If everybody kills themselves, then there's nobody left, right? Okay. So, when we look at the question of what is liberation, what is emancipation, we have to find some other way out. And this, I think, is the crux of the matter, that even people, executives of big industrial and so-called tech companies, they're willing to embrace this idea that, industrial revolution is inherently destructive, it's inherently dehumanizing, it's inherently all these bad things, because the alternative is admitting that if it is that way, it's because people chose to make it that way. This doctrine of Marxist historical inevitability is, in its own way, right, just another front for this idea I've been railing at since the very first of these shows, that what's happening now is happening by the will of God. Pardon me. It's the will of God that some should be rich and some should be poor. It's the will of God that some should live in palaces and some should starve in the streets. I have doubts. I believe that we humans are capable of changing things, but as long as people adhere to this idea, for example, that economics is governed by laws like physical laws, well, that's ridiculous, obviously. Economics is the study of human behavior in society. It's a part of the study of human behavior in society, a part of the study of moral philosophy. And it's deeply shaped by our choices, the things we value. Again, we may not be perfectly free to choose how we respond to stimuli, to choose the things we value and don't value, but we are to some degree free. We are shapers of our own destiny, even if we don't create the material that destiny is shaped from. But, this is where we're at. Reading the Wall Street Journal, of course, it's darkly amusing because they can't figure out where they want their editorial policy to be. They had a big, big story talking about how, the Republican Party is drifting away from big business, and saying that even, some Republicans are even joining with Democrats to put restrictions on business, and they're blaming this not on the fact that there are many people in America who are in serious distress, and therefore, even if they were wrong in attributing this distress to the activities of major businesses, and in many cases they're not wrong, nevertheless, they become more susceptible to radical political ideas. But no, they blame it on a backlash against CEOs promoting woke social causes. If anything, that's putting the cart before the horse, right? Black people and gay people and whoever are being scapegoated for the real distress that is occurring by skillful political operators. But again, the Wall Street Journal can't decide. It wants to be on the side of fascists, but it also wants to be on the side of big business. And the most fascist people in American politics today, many of them are also kind of populist, and they're kind of vaguely anti-big business. And so the Wall Street Journal doesn't know where to be. But when I look at their pages, you know, I see certain things. For example, I see an article about nurses who are extremely dissatisfied because AI is being brought in to make choices about medical care, and these nurses believe that the choices that are being made by the AI are wrong. And of course, why is anyone bringing AI? Well, there's a shortage of skilled nurses. Well, we train lots of them. Where do they go? Well, they leave the profession because of the terrible pay and working conditions, that's all. And then on the back page of the same section of the same paper, there's a whole thing about how, oh, elective surgeries are on the rise, and the CEO of a major medical insurance company told his, on a call with major shareholders, said, oh, yeah, we're going to be in, you know, you're going to be feeling some pain here because, people are actually going to be spending money on medical services. And, you know, we've been making a big profit on them on, you know, collecting premiums and then not paying out anything because people aren't spending money on medical services. Now we may actually have to pay something out. Well, first question I have is, why is a medical insurer allowed to have shareholders that it pays dividends to anyway? But, you know, if you wanted to ask the question, where is the money that should be paying the nurses going to? Well, I think the answer is pretty obvious, isn't it? So, yeah, instead of better working conditions and better pay and more nurses, which you could get with better working conditions and better pay because they're out there, they've just left for somewhere that they're treated better and paid better, or even one or the other. No, we're going to fix this problem with AI. Well, no, you're not going to fix the problem with AI. Similarly, in the Startlegram, in the local paper, they had a syndicated opinion column, somebody from Bloomberg Business, talking about the lawsuit that Merck has filed trying to quash a recent legal provision allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices with drug companies. And the guy says something like, well, I'd rather see drug prices set by the market. Well, that's the one thing that can't happen, right? Because the definition of the free market that economists use requires that you have a very large number of buyers and a very large number of sellers selling identical, undifferentiable commodities differentiated only by price point. Now, this can't happen in the prescription drug market. It, for very good public health and safety reasons, we don't allow just anybody to make up any pharmaceutical he wants in his basement. Hell, even if we did, there aren't all that many people who have the necessary background. So, but that's the thing, is that, you know, somebody who's supposed to be an economist is saying X thing, which is completely opposed to economic theory. Well, why? The answer is that, quote, the market, which was originally a mathematical idealization of a real thing, right, which was used to look at the properties of a certain class of activities in society, right? Commercial transactions of certain kinds. Well, it's gone from being a tool of analysis to being a god to be worshipped. And so again, we get this idea of inevitability. Well, whatever is, it has to be this way. Which is the laziest philosophical construct that there is. Whatever is, is because it has to be this way. So, laziest possible philosophical construct, it's absolutely wrong. And I've spent this time talking about this idea because, again, I see a lot of despair in our world today. I see a lot of people saying, well, you know, rising tide of fascism and climate change, and basically, you know, I might as well just lie down and die. And I think, my God, is it really that bad? Because of all times in history, this is the last time that we should despair. The road to the stars is open. We have, through the twin instrumentalities of the fission chain reaction on the one hand, which gives us access to the intranuclear strong force, the strongest force known to physics, and the high-speed rocket on the other, which allows us to overcome gravity. We have not mastery yet, and I keep saying this, but it keeps being true. We have in our hands the forces that light the stars and shape the galaxies. The whole universe, crazily, insanely, right? We are little beings on a little planet, you know. You've seen the pale blue dot photograph, hopefully, right? You've seen this kind of thing. There's a great photograph was taken a few years back by the Cassini probe. Earth can be seen through the rings of Saturn as a little speck. That's where we are, right? That's where we are. All the possibilities of the universe now lie in our hands. The idea that we're helpless in the face of inevitability has never been less true than it is now. But perhaps the heart and soul of the concept of the as-yet unrealized, right, project of emancipation. Making decisions, making choices is hard. It's especially hard because you first have to have knowledge and understanding to inform the decision and choice-making process. And in order for that to happen, you must have enough leisure. Right, you must have enough time that's not occupied with work and toil. And in this world where the proportion of people engaged in the production of food in countries like the United States or the countries of Western Europe has gone from something like 80% as recently as the 1870s to, well, only 150 years ago, to 2 to 4% today. Right, are the needs of mankind that much greater now than they were? No, we are being afflicted with busy work, I think, in many cases, to stop the ordinary man from enjoying the leisure that he needs in order to gain that understanding, in order to make those choices, in order to truly be free. And that's a horrifying thought, isn't it? That there are people who are so afraid of freedom that they will put whatever obstacles in its way. And so, yes, I do see the anti-nuclear movement as a part of that. People who are afraid. I mean, some of them come out and openly said the reason they oppose nuclear energy is they're afraid of what humanity might do. I don't know. The thing that I have to say every time, right, every single time is, there is a way out. There is a way out of the box. There is, people say, well, why would you want to go into space? I mean, surely it's so difficult to go into space. You know, we could live in Antarctica much more easily, but then you're still, in a sense, or at the bottom of the ocean, but you're still in the same apparently closed system. There is a need, I think, to leave the Earth, not necessarily en masse, right? Not necessarily a billion people at a time, but to have enough people leaving the Earth at any given time that people don't feel trapped, that people don't feel stuck. And this is part of the reason, again, I think that atomic energy and space travel are yoked together in many ways, and not just in the terrible coincidence of their having been brought to a technical level for use in the end part of the Second World War and used as weapons, right? I don't think that's the whole story. I think they are yoked together. I am certain that we can make great improvements here on Earth. We can make the Earth more livable. We can deal effectively with many of our problems if we apply atomic energy in the correct ways. I am also somewhat confident that the necessary work of making improvements in the situation socially, ecologically, and so on Earth is far easier with the state of mind of people who don't feel trapped, who aren't thrashing around, flailing, panicked. And I think that the people who are trying to incite panic, the people who say, oh, well, you know, everything is horrible, everything is on fire, we're all gonna die soon. I mean, those people are blockading any meaningful progress. Now, does this mean that I want Elon Musk's Martian slave colony? No, thank you! There's obviously ways to do and not do things. I'm sure, even, that this whole so-called AI craze, there are ways that this technology can be applied which will advance liberation, advance human welfare, advance the improvement of the natural environment, even. I suspect that applying it a lot less is a good first step, not trying to apply it to everything, particularly problems that you already know there's a perfectly good solution to, you just don't like the solution. But again, I think that this grasping at straws, oh, we'll solve the skilled nursing shortage with AI, oh, we'll, and, you know, name your poison, we'll solve the energy problems with great big batteries, you know, instead of doing the thing that we know will work, and work well, people are grasping at straws, and I think that this is an aspect of this same trapped feeling, this same flailing. You know, flailing behavior, you're not going to do the thing that makes sense because you're already in a state of mind where the world doesn't make sense. Anyway, so that's part of the reason why this, you know, 20th through 23rd of July, I will be at PEMICON, the North American Science Fiction Convention, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and I will be putting on a big atomic energy display and a decent space travel display. It will be, of course, the glorious 20th of July. There's a gem and mineral show here in the area this weekend, which I was hoping to go to because I want to get an opal or a moonstone big enough to have it drilled through and put a little tritium file in it to make a self-luminous watch fob. I think that would be really nifty. But I'm not going because I don't have any money, because all the money I have, and of course your contributions are always welcome, paypal.me/prometheuslives, patreon.com/man_and_adam, all that I can get together is going to building the display, right? Anyway. But send your cards and letters to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. Maybe I'll see you in Winnipeg. Anyway, here's Tobe.